welcome to the Blindfold Chess Podcast. Chess has historically been commented on as black and white, and that extends beyond the chessboard as well. There are female and open tournaments, which are traditionally male, female and open titles, and if they are integrated into the same tournament, then there would be female and open prizes. There are also rules regarding changing your gender marker in both U.S. chess and FIDE. At least for U.S. chess, you can request a gender change before the U.S. chess organization requires documentation to verify your gender identity. This freedom of expression has been challenged by FIDE in August of 2023. FIDE announced a policy that is difficult for the transgender community, to say the least. Examining the FIDE regulations on transgender chess players registration on the FIDE directory, here are some of the highlights. Players are still allowed to change their gender marker, provided they show legal documentation for the change. Transgender women are banned from participating in women's events, and that will not be changed for at least 2 years. If you are transitioning from male to female, in order to qualify for titles, only your current rating is taken into consideration, not your peak rating. If you are female to male, you lose your women's title, but you are awarded the equivalent open title. And lastly, FIDE reserves the right to tell any relevant persons that the player is or was transgender to prevent illegal tournament entry. The link to the documentation and decision is in the show notes. This week, I wanted to look at someone who has challenged the gender binary by looking at Spanish master Natalia Pérez Vivas, the woman who pioneered as being openly trans in the chess community. Born in 1955, she was runner-up for the Spanish Under-20 Championship in 1973 and 75. She was the runner-up in the 1975 and 1987 Catalina Chess Championship, the runner-up to the 2008 Women's Olympiad, the runner-up to the 2008 Catalina Women's Championship, and she has represented Spain in both the Olympiad and the European Individual Chess Championship. She acquired her FIDE Master rating in 1985 at the age of 30, and she is often cited for mastering the England Gambit. It was around this point that she disappeared from tournament play for close to 10 years, a period that she called her discovery phase. Quote, "I couldn't keep my mind on various fronts, and chess was pushed aside despite the fact that for many years it was an important part of my life," Vivas said in an article translated in the description. During her time away, she was involved as the president of the Collective of Transsexuals of Catalonia and the president of the Federation of Transsexuals of Spain. Vivas also was an early pioneer in designing and programming chess computers. She led the creation of the program Tigran, the first official chess program to come out of Spain, and her computer scored fourth in the 1996 Spanish Computer Chess Championships. Upon returning to play in 1998, president of the Spanish Chess Federation, Javier Ochoa de Echagan, said, quote, "This is the first time that a similar case has been presented in the world of chess. Natalia meets all of the legal requirements and therefore has the same rights to that of any other player," end quote. Upon returning, Natalia had said, quote, "I have not felt intimidated, nor have I noticed any nasty kind of joke. So many players have shown their affection and congratulated me in an inclusive way on my comeback. It has all been very endearing." Fast forward to today, a full 25 years later, and there are constant controversies around the world pertaining to the participation of trans men and women in sports, and chess has become no exception. Women have historically played chess as well as men, but there appears to be some level of systemic cultural element that causes many women to pause when pursuing the highest levels of the game, which hurts the game as a whole. Incentives to decrease that gap are apparent. There are women-only tournaments, there are women-only titles set at lower ratings than the open counterparts, and all of this is set to help encourage women to play. However, by creating those systems, you are also creating a culture where it appears as though women are inferior to men in the game. It's a very delicate subject with no clear answer. When Vivas returned to play, she was the number one female player in Spain, and she has since fallen to 13th and has pivoted her attention to teaching and coaching. But it is through players like Natalia that allow us to examine the game as a whole. We create labels to alienate ourselves from one another, whether you're male, female, trans, or any other label. At the end of the day, we're all just humans, and we can all make the choice to be nice to each other. In today's game, we are traveling back to round 4 of the 2009 Women's Team Championship. Natalia Perez-Vivas versus Sanja Dejanet. Now, if we're ready, let's begin.
1. Pawn to e4. Pawn to e6. 2. Pawn to d4. Pawn to d5. 3. Knight c3. Pawn d captures e4. 4. Knight captures e4. Bishop d7. 5. Knight f3. Bishop c6.
This is a pretty unique variation of the French called the Fort Knox variation, where the light square bishop gets outside of the cage that the light square bishop is usually stuck behind with a pawn on c6 and e6.
Six, bishop d3. Knight d7. 7. Castle kingside. Knight g to f6. 8. Knight e to d2. Bishop e7. 9. Knight c4. Bishop d5. 10. Knight c to e5.
In the openings, it's usually a good idea to not move the same piece more than once. We are on move 10, and Natalia has moved her knight 5 times. Can you remember the route? That would be knight from b1 to c3 to e4 to d2 to c4 and now to e5.
Castle kingside. 11. Rook e1. Pawn to b6. 12. Pawn to c4. Bishop b7. 13. Knight g5. Pawn to h6. 14. Knight e captures f7.
I like these types of capturing on f7 moves where we just start to crack into the protection of the king. Natalia had an option to capture on f7 with either of the knights. Why did she capture with the knight on e5 instead of the one on g5? That is because the knight on g5 not only attacks f7, but it also attacks the weak pawn that is on e6.
Rook captures f7. Knight captures e6. Queen b8. Bishop g6. Bishop d6. Bishop captures f7 check. King captures f7. Queen c2. Pawn to c5. Queen f5. Pawn c captures d4. Queen h3.
Queen h3 is kind of an odd move, given that white is trying to continue to attack and add pressure on the black king. But what is the purpose of queen to h3? That is to help cover the h2 square from the battery that black has built up with the queen on b8 and the bishop on d6, both of them attacking h2. By having the queen on h3, white also has some ideas of sacrificing on h6.
Knight e5. Knight captures d4. Knight e to g4. Knight f5.
Knight f5 is really cool. It's an idea of giving up something in order to get something in return. So white is positioning the knight and attacking four pretty critical squares in black's camp. What are those? That would be the bishop on d6, the dark square on e7, the dark square on g7, and the dark square on h6. But white is also giving up something in return. What is that? That would be the pawn on h2 with check. Black has three different pieces targeting h2, but white's rationale is after black captures on h2, black no longer has any threats in the position.
Bishop captures h2 check. King f1. Bishop e5. Pawn to f3. Knight h2 check. King g1. Bishop c8. Bishop d2. Queen c7. Queen c7. 27, Bishop b4. Queen d8. Queen d8. 28, Rook a to d1. Queen c7. Queen c7. 29, Pawn to f4.
Black's position is hanging on by a thread here. The move pawn to f4 uses what chess principle? That would be deflection, as the bishop has a very important job to prevent the white rook on e1 from reaching e7, where you're skewering the black queen on c7 and the black king on f7. As an added perk, the knight on h2 is now stranded.
Bishop captures f5. Queen captures f5. Bishop captures f4. Black resigns.
Black resigned here as rook to e7 is coming, followed by getting the black queen off of the board. The bishop on f4 is hanging. The knight on h2 is super weak. The knight on f6 is pinned, which will allow white's rook on d1 to enter the game through d7. And white's position is just dominating. This episode has been very difficult for me to write. The transgender attempted suicide rate hovers around 40% based on the statistic that you read. I'm hoping one day we can all enjoy this game without the need for labels to get in the way. Please be nice to your friends and family and coworkers. You don't know what battles they are facing. And there are many battles people don't ask for, and they need to navigate that on their own. So that is all that we have for this week. Tune in next time, where we will continue to work on our blindfold skills and look at another game of the Masters.